The content shared on Your Life, Your Wealth Network reflects the views of the host and guests of the program only and are not necessarily the views of Cordasco Financial Network or its advisors. This media production is educational in nature and should not be construed as financial, legal, or tax advice or a solicitation or presentation of sale of any financial products or services. Please consult a professional prior to making any financial, tax, or legal decisions.
Welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network, helping you find clarity and comfort for your life and wealth. Now, here's your host, financial advisor and CEO of Cordasco Financial Network, Steve Cordasco.
And welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth Show. I'm Steve Cordasco. Today, we will discuss the topic of retirement and specifically, what makes people happy in retirement? Is there a direct answer that you can use to help find happiness in your retirement? It's a tough road to tackle, but I thought we'd bring an expert on who studies this. Joining me today on the Your Life, Your Wealth program is Michael Finca. He has been researching for many years now that exact topic, happiness in retirement. He is the chief academic officer at the American College of Financial Services. With a warm welcome, Michael Finca. Welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth show with me, Steve Cordasco.
Thanks so much. Good to be here.
What makes people happiest in retirement based on the studies you have done?
Well, Steve, when you estimate what makes people happy in retirement, and I should take a step back by saying, how do we figure out what makes people happy? There is a wonderful data set from the University of Michigan called the Health and Retirement Study. It's about 20,000 retirees, and it follows them through retirement, started in 1994. And there's some great indicators in there of what we call global life satisfaction. So there's a number of questions that really try to get at whether a retiree is living well. So it's a very reliable indication of who has created a successful retirement for themselves and who hasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And the research that we've done in this area has come to a general conclusion that there are three main drivers of happiness in retirement. And focusing too much on either one of those three is not going to lead to as much satisfaction. But I think it's one of those things where when I'm planning for retirement, I'm much more conscious now of making the right types of choices before retirement to make sure that I'm happy in retirement.
Mm-hmm.
So some of those areas are money. There's been some argument in economics about how much happiness people really get from having more money or from having more income. But the data is clear that if you've got a higher income in retirement and or if you have more wealth in retirement, you're happier. But when we've looked more closely at financial resources, what we see is that there's a lot of people who have a lot of money who are just not that happy. And one of the reasons they're not happy is because they're not healthy. So health is the number two, what I call the number two pillar of happiness in retirement. If you're not healthy, then you can't really enjoy the money that you have. And health, I like to say, is an investment. It's just like saving money in your 401k, exercising or eating well. Those are all going to have a payout in retirement because you are going to live better in mm-hmm. retirement. So mm-hmm. that's an important input into life satisfaction. And the third one is relationships. And particularly the relationship you have with your spouse is the most important relationship that you can have in retirement. So if you're thinking about another investment, investing in the quality of that relationship with your spouse is going to have a big payout in retirement. And if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense because during your working years, they say you marry for breakfast and dinner, but not necessarily for lunch. In retirement, you spend all day with your spouse. And it depends on your circle of friends outside of the marriage, but you will very often rely on your spouse to share your activities in retirement. And if you don't have a good relationship, you're not going to have a good retirement. And most recently, my research focuses on the importance of friendship. and creating deep friendships in your working years that you can then draw from in retirement. That's also a very important investment that you can make, and perhaps underestimated. Even more important than the relationship that you have with your kids is the relationship that you have with your close friends as a predictor of satisfaction in retirement. And I will say, when it comes to spending money, if you think that spending money on a $75,000 car is going to make you happy in retirement, it's probably not. What's really going to make you happy in retirement is spending money on social spending. So these are things like going out to eat with friends, or even going on vacation and putting yourself in opportunities where you're more likely to interact with other human beings. That's perhaps underappreciated. A lot of retirees get to retirement and they think they want to get a cabin in the woods, or they want to rent an RV or buy an RV and drive around the United States and get away from it all. But, you know, getting away from it all gets kind of boring. Even playing golf gets kind of boring. It's fun when it's just a weekend activity to sort of decompress from all the stimulation that we get during the week. But when we do it all the time, all of a sudden, it's not quite as exciting as it was during our working life. So I think it's very important to pay attention to what it is that makes us happy in retirement when we're thinking about how to structure a plan for retirement.
What I like to do, because I'm a financial planner, is help people achieve what they want to achieve. And I feel like I'm on this battle. I keep telling people it's not about numbers, and it's not about your investment returns, and it's not just about money. And they kind of scratch their head and say, well, what else is it? And, well, it's about where you are today, where you want to be tomorrow, and how you want to get there. And down at Duke University, they study behavioral finance and how people behave. And part of their studies, where it came to behavioral finance, they have you go through an exercise where you can shut your eyes and just imagine what your retirement will look like. We do something different. We play a card game where we try to get a husband and wife or families to all use cards to determine what's important to them. What do they want out of life? We do it to try to get away from just numbers, but it's clear to say that money definitely is one of those pillars, right? If you have a good relationship with your spouse, you have friends and you have your health, but you have no money, you can be just about as happy as the person who has money, but not the other two? Is it fair enough to say? Or does one of these outweigh the other?
Well, you know, it's somewhat fair to say. And, you know, I think it's important to, money is fun for keeping score, and people like to keep score, and they like to compare themselves to other people. That's just human nature.
We call that the alpha male in our place. So it's, it tends to gravitate that way. Because if I ask a spouse what matters to you, and it's how much time I get with the grandbabies.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably, maybe you find the same.
Yeah, you know, I think money, if you just recognize that it's just green paper and it doesn't have any intrinsic value. It's just an idea. It's a concept. It's freedom. It's access.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can really start focusing on why you have the money in the first place. Why do you want access to the things that money can buy? And what I see is you can have a lot of money in retirement and be miserable. We actually have looked at the data and sorted it. I mean, social spending is one of those great indicators of whether or not you're living right in retirement. There's plenty of people who have the most wealth, but who are just not spending it, and they're not spending it on the right things. And they're wondering why they're not happy in retirement, I think because they don't really understand what makes them happy as human beings. And, you know, part of your job as a financial planner is not just to get people to accumulate more. I mean, your ultimate job is to get people to live better. And part of getting them to live better is helping them figure out what to do with their money. But money is there as, you know, it just provides access. It's a key to happiness, but you've got to figure out what to do with it. And many retirees, we find out, don't actually spend their money in the first place. So why did they sacrifice so much to save a big nest egg when they're not actually going to use the key to get access to the kind of things that make you happy in retirement?
What do you feel about the world of financial planning, investments, the money world? How do you feel about it, meaning the evolution of the world of finance? based on what you know in your studies, because frankly, we haven't really had a large population group to study that has created wealth over time like the baby boomers have. But yet our industry has sort of evolved as this group of baby boomers has evolved.
You know, it's interesting that you mention that, because we're at the college just rethinking what wealth management education means. We've created a new wealth management education program at the college that acknowledges that it's really not the advisor's job to beat the market. That's not why, I mean, and it's incredibly important, I think, for clients of a financial advisor to realize that that's not the financial advisor's job. There's no evidence that that's a source of value that financial advisors provide. So what do they provide? Well, they sit down with a client and they figure out what their goals are, and then they develop a strategy, a financial strategy for meeting those goals. What is the right mix of investments? What kind of accounts do I put them in? But it's, you know, there is always this misconception that if I use this other financial advisor, I'm going to be able to make more money. Mm-hmm. But that's, you know, as a profession, I hope we eventually move away from that, because there's really no evidence that anybody can consistently beat the market. I mean, we were just talking about Jim Cramer. If you look at the academic evidence, Jim Cramer has his recommendations have underperformed the S&P 500. So why do people spend so much time watching that show? Why do people download stock market apps and check the value of their investments all the time? Is that really making them happier? Is that really helping them understand how to plan for their future? I would say that it distracts them from planning for their financial future.
It does, and that's why I go back to our industry. I think we've, at least the path that's been laid has led to the wrong direction. And at some point, hopefully, it'll swing more to the work you're doing to say, look, money's an ingredient into success and happiness. It's not the whole thing. It's not the sum of all the parts. And trying to get that communication out and to get people educated to understand that it's not about the things you can't control, like the markets. It's about things that you can control that we should be focusing on. Let's move from the money side to health or relationships. So in the money world, we can control budget. We can control what we spend. We might be able to do some things to control taxes. We can't control the markets. We can't control inflation. There's things we can't control. Those are recognizable. We go to health. I guess there's things that we can control and can't control there as well, right? Exercise, eat well, do what we can, don't smoke, moderately drink, everything in moderation. But yet we have a gene pool. So there's things there we can't control as well.
Let me give you a statistic that I find remarkable that I think is underappreciated by Americans in general. If you sort Americans by how much money they earned over their lifetime, and you look at change in longevity over the last 25 years or so, mm-hmm. men in the top 10th percentile of earnings have gained 6 years in longevity over the last 25 years. That's remarkable. I mean, that is a historically important event. And what it tells me is that men are, especially higher income men, are behaving differently than they did in the past. And that change in behavior, if you think that you could make a financial investment that would buy you 6 additional years of life, what would that be worth? Well, what I see is a lot of higher income men, and you probably see the same thing if you go to the kind of places where higher income men hang out, people are more active. They're eating differently. Mm-hmm. You know, if you would have told my grandfather that he should get up in the morning and go for a jog and have a kale smoothie, he probably would have punched you.
Right.
But today's retiree is behaving differently. They're making investments. And I do think that it's important to recognize that despite the fact that we all have different genes, you know, some of us have comparative advantages and disadvantages, health is an investment just like any other investment. And sure, I can save a lot of money, but I'm kind of subject to the whims of whatever the stock market does during my working years. The same way, you know, I can make investments in my health. And I may be subject to some randomness because of my genetics, but it's an investment, and I should think about it as a similar type of investment to saving money. And I should also remember that if I'm saving money and I'm not investing in health, then I may be investing in the wrong resources, because I, you know, may end up with a lot of money but not a whole lot of years to spend it, and I won't have the physical ability to spend it and actually enjoy it.
And it's interesting, because the thing I thought of when you said an extra 6 years is what the statistics show, that those that have accumulated in the higher wealth range and been able to live a lifestyle of higher income, therefore there's that correlation, right? So what you're telling me is that those that have been better savers and accumulators of wealth approach their later years in a way that's more healthy, meaning they have more ability to say, I'm going to focus on my health and spend on my health.
I think that's true. I think, but I also think that it is the same motivation, the imagining the future that we were talking about before, that creates the incentive for people to set money aside today. Mm-hmm. They could spend it today, but instead they defer it for the future. Mm-hmm. And I get up in the morning and I decide to exercise instead of staying in bed. You know, mm-hmm. It's also a sacrifice that I'm making in order to live better in the future. So both of them, and I would like to say, I never realized that maintaining friendships and maintaining relationships could be viewed as an investment the same way that investing in health or investing in money is an investment. But I'm increasingly convinced from looking at the research that that's an important investment that many of us don't consider.
Let's talk about the relationship side. Wife, family, friends. Did we cover it all? And talk about how relationships can equal as much happiness as maybe the variable of money and health can in retirement.
Yeah, you know, I mentioned before that I had never really thought of relationships as an investment. But increasingly, as I look at the research, what I see is that women in particular do a much better job of maintaining investments in friendships that last into retirement. And very often, men, their primary friendships occur at work. And if they're not making a conscious effort to maintain relationships that are going to last them into retirement, then that's a failure to invest in a very important predictor of life satisfaction in retirement, and that is the time that you spend with true friends, friends that you have known for a long time, friends that you know you. That's a big source of satisfaction in retirement, and I think men very often underestimate it.
Can you share with us just why that happens? And it sounds so easy to say, hey, keep those relationships going, but they don't seem to happen.
Well, especially the work relationships. What we see is those work relationships very often fall by the wayside over time. And social isolation is a big deal in retirement. And let's also, I don't know if it's entirely healthy to just assume that you're not going to work anymore in retirement. I've always wondered why, if someone gets downsized when they're 62, it's a tragedy. But if someone decides voluntarily to retire at age 64, then we celebrate it. Mm-hmm. You know, they're both in the same place. They're both going home, and they have to fill their own day with something. Mm-hmm. And filling their own day with something fulfilling. And we know that human beings are happiest when they have what scientists like to call flow. And what is flow? Well, flow is doing something that is what you're good at, doing something that is challenging, but not too challenging. And what this means is that, you know, sitting in front of the television in retirement is not going to give you flow. Something is out there that's going to give you flow. Maybe it is work for pay. Maybe it's volunteering. But there's got to be something, and you've got to give some thought to what that something is going to be. You know, a lot of people are saying that the new phenomenon is the second act, that baby boomers are going to be the first generation that's really going to define what that second act is going to look like, because it's difficult to imagine a lot of them just simply kicking back and not doing anything in retirement. So I think, you know, when you're thinking about retirement planning, not enough thought goes to how are you going to fill the hours in your day. I very often give the example of the financial services companies, you know, when they take a photograph of what retirement looks like, they very often take this photograph of a couple sitting in beach chairs facing the ocean, maybe holding hands. That's not what people do in retirement. They watch TV. Other than sleep, that's the number one activity in retirement.
Right.
And if we're going to get enjoyment out of retirement, we've got to do something else.
Who gives the guidance to help people maintain through those years? Because it does take some guidance. Because all three of these components, these variables that go into success and happiness in retirement, oftentimes needs a team built around it.
It really comes down to the essence of what it means to be a financial advisor. Is where does that line end? Does that line end at investment recommendations, or does that line end at where the investments become a part of someone's life and how to plan for a life in retirement? There's just so much science that goes into what happens to us as we get older. Where should we be living? Should we be staying in our home? Should we be living with other people? That's all part of that planning process as well. And I do feel that the more you know about it, the better able you are to provide some type of guidance.
Exactly.
And the most informed advisors are the ones who are really paying attention to this area and collecting as much information as possible. I'll tell you, it is a new field in science. There's a lot of us who are doing research in this area, but in many ways, it's wide open.
You're at the American College of Financial Services. You're the chief academic officer. We look for certified financial planners. What's interesting is when certified financial planners come to me, it's almost like, hey, I got this designation. Therefore, I'm certified. I'm great. And then you start talking to them about this space, and it becomes apparent just how much of a generalist they are versus someone who can do this deeper work. What's happening from the academia level where we might be introducing this as part of the curriculum? Because I know as I pay for certified financial planning courses for people who work here at Cardasco Financial Network and the way the coursework works, it doesn't seem to have that much inclusion in this space.
Well, thank you for mentioning that, because the college recently developed a retirement income certified professional designation program that is meant to give advisors expertise in this area of retirement planning. And the curriculum includes income planning. That's an important element of it, but it also includes a lot of life planning elements, including right. What makes you happy in retirement and what are your living environment choices and how do you deal with cognitive and physical decline later on in life. That's, you know, I like to think of being a financial planner as requiring a base degree, like a medical degree. But if you want to specialize in something, then you should receive an enhanced education in a specialized area, such as retirement income planning. And I really feel the college has been a thought leader in the area of retirement planning for financial planners, bringing in experts from the outside to help provide that type of context so the financial advisors can move beyond that base of knowledge and have a more deep understanding of what it means to actually plan for a life in retirement.
Yeah. To go it alone and do it independent, I think, is kind of the moral of this story, that it's very difficult to do. And trying to find the right people in your relationships, trying to find the right people from a health standpoint to guide you correctly, from the money standpoint, same thing, financial. But you need to have the people that understand that all of these variables overlap to equal the sum of the parts. So it's interesting stuff. Great work you're doing. I'd love to have you on again. You've been an excellent guest, and I actually love what you're doing, because you're going to make my life a lot easier, where we're not going to look like mad scientists or someone without the medical degree that says, here, take some of these vitamins and holistically let's do this. But I feel like we're very holistic, at least at Cardasco Financial Network, because just trying to get people to talk and uncover where they want to go and trying to explain it's not just about the numbers. I'd like to thank Michael Finca for being part of the program. Michael, thanks so much. Love to have you back again.
Thanks so much.
please give me feedback. Would really, really like your feedback on this program, because guess what? When I do these programs where they're not so numbers-centric, I wonder whether or not it appeals to you because it is so different. Ask Steve at CFNplan.com. Love to hear from you. Thanks so much.
Thanks for joining us on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. All of our shows can be listened to on demand at your convenience. If you're interested in learning more about applying the principles we discuss to your personal financial circumstances, please visit Cordasco Financial Network at CFNplan.com or call our office at 215-558-3500. We hope you'll join us again next time on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network.